I can't get over it. You're beautiful, but it's the kind of beauty that's so unattainable. It's otherworldly. I snort. That's very poetic of you, sweetie. But inside, Selena Gomez and I are doing an entire cheerleading routine's worth of cartwheels and flips. Nobody has ever called me otherworldly. I think I like it. When footsteps echo in the hall, we both stiffen. And this is something I don't like. The awful cloud of tension that's fallen over our household. If we're in my bedroom or Fitz's, the tension fades away. The conversation flows and there's an ease between us that I've never experienced with another guy before. Anywhere else in the house, the thundercloud looms. Hunter's hardly spoken a word to us since Thursday night. We've been tiptoeing around him, and even Hollis, who's fazed by nothing, admitted that Hunter's brooding is getting to him. I don't know how to make the situation better, though. Hunter needs time to get used to the idea that Fitz and I are dating, I guess. We haven't given it a label yet, but I'm in no rush. I know he likes being with me, and that's all that matters at the moment. Besides, it's not like I could raise the subject on Valentine's Day weekend. That's pressure with a capital everything for a guy. In fact, we barely even acknowledged that yesterday was Valentine's Day. We watched Titanic with Hollis, then went upstairs and made out for a bit. Not with Hollis. Beyond his door, I hear the footsteps travel down the stairs, then grow muffled. The TV switches on in the living room. We both relax. Must be Hollis, then. Hunter hasn't hung out in the living room in days. Okay, I think I'll write the conclusion tomorrow. My brain needs to recharge. I set the laptop and notebook on the hardwood and pick up the leather portfolio that contains everything related to Summer Lovin', the cheesy name I've chosen for my swimwear line. I'm holding my first fittings with the models in a few days. Nearly all my pieces are done. I sewed most of them myself in the fashion department's sewing rooms. Brenna kept me company for a couple hours yesterday, mockingly calling me Home Ec Barbie. The crochet bikinis I had to outsource. I'm working with an awesome seamstress in Hastings. Once I tailor the swimsuits to my models, we'll do a final fitting to iron out any kinks, and then we're good to go. I need to redo this one pair of briefs, I say absently, flipping through my designs. My seamstress says the cut is too high for a man. I'll draw a couple other options and see what she says.
Draw?
There's a funny note to his voice. I glance over, confused by the astonishment in his eyes. Yes, draw. How do you think I designed these swimsuits? I did sketches of them.
Sketches?
Fitz is staring at me as if he's never seen me before in his life. Yes, sketches. What's wrong with your face? He shakes his head a few times as if it's stuffed with cobwebs.
I can't believe you can fucking draw, and this is the first time hearing about it.
I arch my eyebrows. What? You're the only one in this house who's allowed to draw? That's a bit arrogant, don't you think? Fitz flings his sketchbook aside and shuffles over to me. I gotta see this. Show me. I snap the portfolio closed and hug it to my chest. Before, I would have gladly shown him the sketches. Now, with his eager eyes and grabby hands, I feel an anvil of pressure weighing on my throat. It's a bunch of bikinis and swim trunks. Nothing fancy, I insist.
Let me see.
My cheeks heat up. No, you're, like, the most talented artist in the world. He showed me pictures of some of his paintings, mostly dazzling fantasy worlds and dystopian landscapes, and his art blew my frickin' mind. I draw clothes.
Garments can be really difficult to draw.
Uh-huh. No need to humor me.
I'm serious. Clothing is elements that a lot of artists tend to overlook. There are shadows and creases in the drape of the garment, in the way certain fabrics hold. He shrugs. Can be challenging.
I guess. I still think he's humoring me, but his earnest expression has me relinquishing the sketches. Fitz doesn't say a single word as he scrutinizes each one. I try to see the drawings through his eyes, but it's hard to tell what he thinks. The figures are at their most basic. Faceless, with long limbs that aren't anatomically correct, because it doesn't matter. They're only there to display the garments. These are great, he tells me, then spends a long time examining a one-piece with a plunging neckline that reveals my pencil-drawn model's perfectly round boobs. Nice tits, he remarks. I fight a laugh. You know they're not real, right?
They're not? Right on. I support a woman's choice to get a boob job, whatever makes her happy.
You're hilarious.
He looks at the sketch again. Did you use your own tits for reference?
He drawls. Come on, those are way bigger than mine. His seductive gaze drops to my chest. I'm still sporting the dress I wore to campus today, and its high neckline and long sleeves don't offer much in terms of cleavage. But Fitz is ogling me as if I'm completely topless.
I don't know. Yours are pretty big.
I'm a C cup. That's average.
That is not average.
Mm-hmm. And you know the universal boob size average because... You personally polled every woman in the world?
No. But there's this thing on the internet, Summer. It's called porn. Have you ever heard of it?
My laughter can't be contained this time. I have so much fun with this guy. It's unreal.
I'm so turned on right now, he adds. Just so you know.
Because of my cartoon lady's bigger than average boobs?
No. Because you're an artist. You literally just became 100 times hotter to me.
Rolling my eyes, I gather my stuff and get to my feet. I'm going to put all this back in my room. You said you wanted to watch something on Netflix. Are we still doing that?
Like hell we are.
The growly timbre stops me from taking another step. When I notice his expression, a shiver rolls through me. He looks at me as if I'm his next meal. You're smoldering, I inform him. Fitz walks over and takes my school stuff from my hands. Without a word, he sets the entire pile on the bed. Then he returns. He's unzipping his pants as he walks. My breath gets stuck in my throat. Oh my God. Saliva floods my mouth. He's got a rocket in there. I want it. To my dismay, he simply reaches a hand inside his undone pants and does some rearranging, tucking his hard-on under the waistband of his boxers. My jaw opens. Are you kidding me? You unzipped your pants just to hide your sweet penis from me? He chokes out a laugh.
My sweet penis can wait a few minutes.
Wait for what? His mouth is on mine before I can finish. A loud moan slips out, which he swallows with his soft, hungry lips.
Quiet,
he murmurs, even as his tongue scrapes over mine in a dirty, dirty kiss.
Mike's downstairs, and my door isn't locked.
Should we lock it? He cuts me off with another kiss. I guess he's confident in our roommate honoring the privacy code. With his lips glued to mine, he nudges me backward. My butt bumps into his desk, and a pair of earphones crash to the floor. Fitz ignores that and slips one hand underneath my dress. I shiver when his fingers graze my inner thigh. His knuckles briefly rub my damp panties, and then he moves the fabric to the side, and the pad of his thumb presses on my clit. The air leaks out of my lungs in a squeaky rush.
Feel good?
He whispers in my ear. What do you think? He smiles, and it's filthy and adorable at the same time. His hand glides over me. The heel of it now tends to my swollen clit, while his middle finger teases my opening. Every nerve ending in my body crackles to life.
I never, ever want this to stop.
Fitz bends and kisses the column of my throat. I'm sure he can feel my pulse throbbing there. His mouth is hot on my neck when his finger slips inside. He doesn't go too deep. Instead, he curls it and rubs a sweet spot inside me.
So wet,
he croaks. Yep, I am, and I can barely stay upright. Luckily, he's gripping my butt with his other hand, holding me steady while he expertly fingers me. The pleasure builds to an excruciating point until I'm swaying on my feet even with his strong grip on me. He laughs huskily.
Up on the desk.
I almost cry when he withdraws his finger.
but I follow his orders and find an available surface, which is hard because there are computer monitors and gaming equipment all over his desk. The second my ass connects with the solid wood, Fitz bunches the hem of my dress between his fingers. The calluses on his palms rake my bare legs as he drags the fabric up to my waist. His hungry gaze focuses on my pink bikini panties. Before I can blink, he's tugging them off and tossing them aside. I'm completely exposed to him now, and he eyes me like a man who's just discovered a secret treasure. No teasing tonight. There's a note of desperation in my voice. Just fuck me. He chuckles and goes to get a condom from his drawer. He eases his cargo pants and boxers down his hips until his penis springs free and slaps his washboard stomach. You are so sexy, I breathe, staring at his thick erection. The pressure between my legs intensifies. He's so big and so male, and I've never wanted anybody the way I want him. Licking his lips, Fitz covers himself with the condom. When he grips the base of his erection, anticipation ripples through me. I spread my legs wider. Heat flares in his eyes. He steps into the cradle of my thighs and guides himself inside me. And that's when the door swings open and Hunter stumbles into the bedroom.
26. Fitz. Ah, well, this is cozy. Summer and I freeze as Hunter makes a not-so-graceful entrance, staggering into my room without warning. And we have no choice but to remain frozen because my ass is bare and my dick is buried deep inside her. But Hunter doesn't know that yet. From his vantage point, it looks like Summer is sitting on my desk, and I'm standing between her legs. Bare-assed, sure, but I don't think he's picked up on that. He is noticeably drunk. I'm talking wasted. His broad, muscular body weaves and lurches as he wanders around my room. His gaze briefly connects with mine, and I can see him struggling to focus his eyes. They're hazy with intoxication. He finally stops at the foot of the bed, then spreads his arms and lets himself fall backward onto the mattress. He lands with a thump and starts to laugh. He rises on his elbows and grins at me. Still hasn't noticed that my ass is hanging out. Fucking hell, Fitz, your bed is way more comfortable than mine. Lucky bastard. Summer's hands tremble on my waist. She slowly slides them off and flattens them on the desktop. Her pussy spasms around my still hard cock. I don't know if it's intentional or involuntary, but I choke back a groan all the same. I just came from this party at Sigma Chow. Sigma Chi. He's slurring now. And my buddy was like, what do you mean you're pissed at Fizzy? You grow a vagina or something? Summer shifts and I give her a warning look. I'm waiting for the right moment to pull out. And it can't be when Hunter's gaze is on me like white on rice. It takes several seconds to find my voice. Dude, can we talk about this later, maybe in private? What are... Hunter trails off, his eyes narrow. Then he laughs. Are you inside her right now? Get the fuck out. I growl. His shoulders shake with laughter. You are. Jesus, that's kind of hot. Screw it. Despite his gaze boring into me, I withdraw from the heat of Summer's body and hastily tuck my dick in my pants, condom still on. Summer shoves her skirt down and hops off the desk. Two red splotches stain her cheeks. Ah, you didn't have to stop on my account. Hunter, I say flatly. What? He raises his hands in a gesture of innocence. We're roomies. Sometimes roomies watch each other fuck. Summer exits my room without a backward glance. I don't blame her. I see the tight set of her shoulders, but I know she's not pissed at me. Hell, she's probably not pissed at Hunter. If anything, that's nothing but sheer embarrassment tensing her body. Hello to you too, Blondie. Hunter calls after her, but gets no response. Shrugging, he stumbles back to his feet. Didn't waste any time, did you, Fitz? How long after I dropped her home did it take for you to dick her down? I bite back my anger. He's drunk. And as much as I hate to say it, he has a point. Let's talk when you're sober, all right? Let's not. He shakes his head, continuing to laugh under his breath as he weaves toward the door. You and Blondie do your thing. I'll do mine. And they all live happily never ever. I mean after. Happily ever after. I frown at his retreating back. Hunter. Are we good? I ask warily. He glances at me over his shoulder. No. I do my best to keep my distance from Hunter after that, especially around the house. It's the least I can do. On one hand, Summer and I didn't do anything wrong. It's not like she was officially dating him. But Hunter had made his intentions clear to me. He'd staked a claim, and I'd trampled over it. But at the time, I hadn't thought Summer and I were possible. I thought I'd been friend-zoned. But that's neither here nor there. You can't change the past. You can only try to better the future. In this case, it means giving Hunter his space, which Summer and I both agree is probably for the best right now. If it were Hollis or Tuck, maybe I'd handle the situation differently, talk to them, try harder to fix shit. But Hunter and I, while friends, aren't super close. He's got a great sense of humor and he's fun to be around, but the truth is I don't know him very well. So I maintain the distance. I thought it'd be harder to do considering we live together, but Hunter isn't around much in the days following our confrontation. I can't completely avoid him though because we're forced to interact during practice. Harvard is still leading our conference. We play them again in a few weeks, so Coach Jensen and Coach O'Shea are working us even harder these days. On Wednesday morning, we run several one-on-one drills, followed by a three-on-three minigame. Jesse, Maddie, and me versus Hunter, Nate, and Kelvin. Hunter and I take center. As he gets into position, I glimpse his determined expression and know this ain't gonna be pleasant. I'm not wrong. He gains possession and skates off. When he tries to pass the puck to Nate, it's intercepted by Matt, who snaps it over to me. I fly toward the blue line and dump the puck, catching up to it again behind the net. I barely get my stick on it before I'm slammed into the boards. The hit is harder than necessary, and so is the elbow to the ribs, courtesy of Hunter. He flashes a humorless smile and steals the puck from me. Then he's gone. Motherfucker, that hurt. But fine, whatever. I let it slide. He has a right to be angry, and it's better he let out his aggression on the ice rather than off it. Here in the arena, it's controlled violence, which is one of my favorite things about hockey. It might be stupidly primal, and it makes men as dumb as women claim we are, but sometimes it's nice to release our pent-up aggression in a place where we can't get in trouble for it. As practice continues, the encounters between me and Hunter get more and more physical. Our teammates start to notice. Nate whistles softly when I give Hunter a bone-jarring cross-check. I swear I hear the breath leave Hunter's lungs. Save it for the game, Nate urges after the whistle blows. We line up for another face-off. Hunter's eyes are blazing at me. He didn't like that check. Well, I didn't like his elbow in my ribs, so what can you do? This time I win the face-off. Jesse and I flip the puck back and forth as we plan our attack, lazy and predatory. Hunter's line doesn't like being toyed with, and just as they go on the attack, Jesse snaps the puck to me and I take my shot. Corson stops it with his stick, then passes to Hunter. I chase after him and we wind up behind my net. Elbows are thrown. One hits me in the center of the throat. For a second, I actually can't breathe. I gasp for air, but my windpipe isn't working. I feel like I'm choking. Hunter doesn't care. He gives me a shove as he skates away, and I manage to catch my balance before I fall. That throat move? No way. I skate after him, the game all but forgotten. What the hell was that? A hush falls over the rink. I hear the hiss of Nate's skate blades as he comes to a stop a few feet away from us. It was a clean hit, Hunter says. I growl. Nothing clean about that. No? Sorry then, my bad. His careless tone grates on my last nerve. Whatever, bro, if knocking me around makes you feel better, go for it. Aw, how generous of you, giving me permission to throw down. Totally makes up for the fact that you're fucking the chick I like. Yep, he went there. Nate skates closer, his stick dangling loosely from his glove. Come on, guys, we got work to do. We ignore him. Look, Summer and I have been dancing around each other for more than a year. I had a thing for her before I ever knew you. Funny, you didn't mention having a thing for her when I told you that I did. I can feel our teammates watching us, which gives rise to the familiar prickling sensation that means all eyes are on me because I've just been dropped into drama I can't avoid. I push past him, but he grabs a handful of jersey. Let's not do this here, I mutter. Why not? You don't want everyone to hear what a dick you are? Hey, ladies, Coach shouts. We don't have all day. Get your asses back to the bench. Hunter reluctantly obeys. I happily do, because being the center of attention makes my skin crawl. Coach announces we're running more battle drills. The first drill involves two players out of the corner. One needs to drive the net, the other has to stop him. From the bench, I watch as several pairs battle it out. Then it's my turn, and I'm not at all surprised when Coach announces I'm up against Hunter. Maybe, like me, he's hoping Hunter will release all his hostility and leave it on the ice. The second the whistle blows, Hunter uses every dirty trick in the book to keep me trapped in the corner. I finally break free and get a shot off, but the sophomore goalie, Trenton, easily captures the puck with his glove and then tosses it in the air with a grin. Run it again, Coach demands. So we do, once again manhandling each other in the corner. I manage to gain possession and drive the net, but before I can shoot, pain jolts up my arm as the fucker two-hands me in the wrist. What the fuck is wrong with- I don't get to finish the sentence. The next thing I know, I'm flat on my back, the wind completely knocked out of me. His gloves drop, a fist slams into my chest, my helmet slides off, and another fist connects with my jaw. I hear the cheers and shouts of our teammates. Some are egging us on, others trying to break it up. Someone tries to pull Hunter off me. It doesn't quite work, but it gives me the opportunity to ditch my own gloves and unleash a few decent retaliation blows. But then Hunter punches me again, and I taste blood in my mouth. Breathing heavily, we take a few more swings at each other until Nate launches himself between us and forcibly shoves us apart. A couple of the other seniors come up and grab hold of each of us to stop us from attacking again. Well, you ladies work it out. From his perch near the home bench, Coach Jensen sounds utterly bored. O'Shea looks like he's trying not to laugh. Hit the showers, he tells us. I look down and notice the red droplets staining the ice. It's my blood. I didn't draw a single drop from Hunter. But I'm gratified to note that his cheek is beginning to swell. He'll have a bruise tomorrow. I'll have a split lip. Not quite even, but at least I left some damage. I meet his hard gaze. I'm sorry, man. I think he's scraping his teeth together because his cheeks keep hollowing in and out. Yeah, he shrugs. I think you actually mean that. I do. We stare at each other. Hunter's legs slide apart as he gets ready to skate, and the senior's tense, prepared to break us apart again. But he doesn't move toward me. He skates backward for several feet, eyeing me in thought. Then he offers another shrug and rotates his body, leaving his discarded gear scattered on the ice behind him. He glances over his shoulder at me. Don't worry, Fitz. I'll get over it. I'm not so sure about that. 27. Fitz. 3 weeks later. Six half-naked football players compete in a twerking contest while It's Raining Men blasts out of the wireless speakers. No, that's not the setup for a raunchy joke. It's what Hollis and I come home to on this chilly Tuesday morning. We'd just finished practice and then grabbed breakfast at the diner in Hastings because Summer said she needed the dining room and living room for her final fittings. Hollis's jaw falls open as he takes in the scene before him. Is this the wrong house? He asks me.
Yeah, Rex!
Brenna is shouting from her spot on the armchair. She waves a dollar bill in the air while Summer and a girl I don't recognize laugh uncontrollably from the couch. The star wide receiver of the Briar football team shakes his ass before sauntering over to Brenna and proceeding to give her a lap dance. Nope. I hear Hollis mutter. Nope, nope, nope. A second later, he's in front of the entertainment unit, powering off the speaker. The music stops. Rex's dance comes to an abrupt end. At first, the big guy looks disappointed, but then he notices me in the doorway and says, Fitzgerald, what do you think? He points with both index fingers at his Speedo. Well, technically not a Speedo, but a summer-loving original. Rex is wearing navy blue briefs with silver stripes on the sides, and when he does a full turn, I grin at the S stitched on his ass. It's nice, I tell him, but it's a bathing suit, and I have no opinion one way or the other about bathing suits. I've owned the same pair of trunks for like 5 years. Summer rolls her eyes.
Don't bother with Fitzy, he doesn't understand fashion.
She gets up from the couch and approaches Greer Lockett.
Don't move for a sec, something's not right with this seam.
And then my girlfriend drops to her knees in front of another man's junk and starts fondling him. Summer, I say politely. She pokes her head from around Lockett's crotch.
What is it, sweetie?
Do you need help jacking him off? Rex and the others break out in gales of laughter. Summer gives me the finger and my jaw drops when she reaches around and pats Lockett on the butt.
Okay, take these off and put on real clothes. I'm gonna need to take that apart and restitch it.
Lockett hooks his fingers under the waistband.
In the bathroom!
She squeaks before he can yank his trunks down.
Jesus!
Well, you're no fun. Pouting, Lockett lumbers out of the living room.
The rest of you can get dressed too. Everything looks great.
She turns to address Rex, who I know is the unofficial leader of the offense. His quarterback, Russ Wiley, might be the actual captain, but I hear Russ is an egomaniac. Rex, meanwhile, is universally loved.
So, we're all set for next week. The show starts at 9, but I'll need you guys there at least an hour before.
Don't worry, cutie. We'll be there with balls on.
Bells,
Brenna's friend corrects from the sofa. Rex fixes her with a stern look. Audrey, when I say balls, I mean balls. She snorts and goes back to checking her phone.
Are you sure the timing is okay?
Summer presses.
I heard Bibby mention something about a team-building retreat, but isn't it the off-season?
It is, Bibby grumbles. Jules, another wide receiver, rolls his eyes. Coach is making us attend this hippy-dippy bullshit course because we fell apart in the playoffs. Because Wiley fell apart in the playoffs. Lockett corrects, referring to their quarterback. I don't miss the disappointment in their expressions. Before this season, it had been a while since Breyer had produced a football team with a good record. The fact that they'd ranked so high this year only to lose in the postseason must kill them. He thinks we have trust issues, Jules says. He shrugs. So we've been sentenced to 5 days of forced camaraderie. Brenna raises her eyebrows.
5 days? That's savage.
We get back on the day of the show, Rex says. When he notices Summer's worried eyes, he ruffles her hair reassuringly. But we'll have plenty of time to spare. The bus is dropping us at campus around 7:38. Summer nods with relief.
Okay, perfect.
As the players leave the room to change into their street clothes, Summer gathers her supplies and tucks them into the huge sewing case on the coffee table. Audrey is now chatting with Lockett, who returns in track pants and a Patriots hoodie. And in the armchair, Brenna is now bent over her phone, her long hair forming a dark curtain around her face.
Who are you texting?
Summer asks her.
Nobody.
But it's clearly somebody, based on her secretive tone and the quick glance she flicks in Hollis's direction. The cloud of hurt in his blue eyes is unmistakable, and sympathy tugs at my gut. I don't think he's given up on the idea of him and Brenna yet, but it's been a month since they hooked up, and it's evident she's not looking for a repeat. I'm making a coffee, he finally mutters, tearing his gaze off Brenna. Want one, Fitz? No, thanks. I had 2 cups at Della's, and I'm still wired. The moment he disappears into the kitchen, Summer launches an interrogation.
Spilby, who is he? Do I know him?
Brenna shrugs.
You met him once.
Summer continues watching her like a hawk.
Who is it?
I'm pretty sure she's holding her breath as she awaits Brenna's response. When she doesn't get one within 3 seconds, she blurts out,
Is it Jake Connolly?
My head swivels toward Brenna. Are you fucking kidding me?
God, no, it's not Connolly. He's such a prick. Then who?
Summer demands.
Just tell me, otherwise I'll steal your phone and... Relax, crazy girl. It's Josh, okay? Who?
McCarthy, Brenna clarifies. Summer gasps.
The Harvard guy? Oh my God, how do you even have his number? He messaged me on Facebook, wanted to apologize for losing his shit when he found out who my dad was, Brenna offers another shrug. We're just fooling around, though. Nothing serious.
I don't miss how she discreetly slips the phone into her purse, as if a part of her is worried Summer might actually try to snatch it from her. And there's no more discussion after that, because the rest of the guys file into the room and exchange their goodbyes with Summer. Brenna and Audrey announce they're taking off, too. So our front hall turns into a can of sardines as eight people, six of them enormous football players, put on their coats and boots and various winter gear. "Hey, Summer," one of the players hesitates at the door. He's got a mop of curly brown hair and a shy expression. "Are there any tickets still available? I checked online and it said the show's sold out."
"It is, but all the designers get a block of tickets to give away. I think I have about five left. How many do you need, Chris?"
"Just one. It's for my girlfriend, Daphne." Summer freezes. And I mean freezes. She was in the process of reaching up to tuck some hair behind her ear, and her arm literally stops midair. Then it drops abruptly to her side, and at least 5 seconds tick by as she stares at Chris, whose body language displays some serious discomfort.
"Do you mean, did you ever go out with a kappa named Kaya by any chance?"
Chris shoves his gloved hands in his pockets. "Yeah, I dated Kaya, but that was a long time ago." He frowns. "I'm with Daphne now."
"Daphne Kettleman?"
He looks startled. "Yeah, you know her?" Summer's entire body seems to vibrate with excitement.
"No, I don't know her."
Since she moved in with us, I've witnessed this girl get excited about many things. Her Prada boots, One Direction, Leonardo DiCaprio, sex. But I've never seen her face light up the way it does during this conversation about Daphne Kettleman, whoever that is.
"Oh my God. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm freaking out right now."
She's practically bouncing on her feet.
"I can't wait to meet her. Tell her I'm a huge fan. Oh my God. Tell her we need to chill at the after party."
Chris gives her a strange look. As he should. I'd be weirded out too if, for no discernible reason, some crazy blonde lost her shit at the thought of meeting my girlfriend. Sure. I'll tell her." He starts backing away, then mutters a hasty goodbye and flees. "Because that wasn't fucking weird," I tell Summer. She beams at me.
"You don't even know. Daphne's reputation precedes her."
And then she babbles on about Daphne and alcohol poisoning and someone stealing Daphne's clothes, and I follow her up the stairs and try to keep up until my eyes finally glaze over. We enter my room and I lock the door, shutting Summer up the only way I know how. By kissing her. But kissing her never fails to lead to a raging hard-on, which she notices instantly.
"It's 9 o'clock in the morning, Fitz. How are you always so horny, no matter what?"
"My cock can't tell time." She laughs, a sweet melody that makes my dick sing along with anticipation. I kiss her again, and we're naked in no time at all, making out on the bed with our legs tangled together and our hands busy exploring. As her fingers roam my bare chest, she releases a happy sigh.
"There should be a law stating you're not allowed to wear a shirt ever."
"There should be a law stating you're not allowed to wear anything ever." I ease out of her grip and kiss my way down her centerfold body until I reach my favorite place on earth. I go down on her until she's clawing at the sheets and begging me to get inside her. But rather than climb on top of her, I sprawl on my back and tug her on top of me. "Ride me," I tell her, and she's happy to oblige. In a heartbeat, I've got a condom on and there's a beautiful woman grinding on my dick. Pain stings my pecs as she digs her nails into my skin, her pelvis moving in slow, seductive strokes. The teasing tempo doesn't last long, though. Soon her pace increases and she's riding me in earnest. I lie back and admire the view, her perky breasts swaying as she moves, the flush rising in her cheeks. She bites her bottom lip and I can see in her eyes that she's close. She's got that fuzzy, blissed-out look that I love, and when she cries out and collapses on top of me, her orgasm pushes me over the edge. I wrap my arms around her as she milks every last drop of pleasure from my body. I can only manage short, ragged breaths, and it takes a few minutes before my brain is able to function again. I open my eyes to find Summer grinning at me.
"You okay?"
she teases. I groan. "I can't feel my legs."
"Oh, you poor baby."
She strokes my shoulders and kisses a spot between my pecs.
"How can I make it better?"
"You just did." I groan at the loss of her when she climbs off me, and I'm still sporting a semi, a fact she wastes no time commenting on when she returns from the bathroom.
Oh, good.
Her eyes light up.
You'll be ready to go again soon.
I roll onto my side. Damn, woman, one orgasm isn't good enough for you. You have incredibly high expectations.
I require at least two.
She jumps on the bed and nestles in front of me so that she's my little spoon.
I'm kidding, I'm good for now.
That was incredible. Mm-hmm. I agree. I sling an arm around and hold her tight. I'm feeling sleepy all of a sudden. Wanna take a nap?
Mm-hmm.
She sounds drowsy too. My eyelids flutter closed. I feel myself starting to drift, my mind starting to fade, when suddenly I remember something. Hey, babe.
Hmm?
She snuggles her ass closer to my groin, and the heat of her body seeps into me. Thursday night.
What about it?
It's the fundraiser, the one Kamal Jane wants me to go to. His assistant emailed me the details this morning. It's at your hotel. That gets her attention.
The Hayward Plaza?
Mm-hmm. I run my fingers over her hip. Her skin is so fucking soft. I have a plus one.
Hmm?
I laugh. I feel we can have an entire conversation with just hmms and mm-hmms.
We should try it when I'm not in an orgasm coma.
Deal. I press a kiss on the nape of her neck. You want to go to the fundraiser with me?
Hold on. You're inviting me to a fancy party where I get to dress up and be social? What the hell is wrong with you? That's so not my scene.
I sigh. You're right, that was a stupid question.
Of course I'll go, but I have one condition.
Hmm?
I get to pick your outfit.
Well, yeah. My shoulders tremble with laughter as I wrap my arms tighter around her. I'd never dream of picking my own. 28. Fitz. We're going to be late, I tell Summer's closet. I'd like to tell Summer herself, but she's been locked up in the cavernous walk-in for the past 2 hours. At first I didn't mind, because it gave me the opportunity to explore the penthouse, which I didn't have a chance to do when I came here with Dean once. The place has a sleek, modern design, and it's luxury to the max. I'd poked my head into their library, and then had to duck right back out, because I'd require about 3 full days to thoroughly examine the contents of the enormous walnut-paneled room. I can't believe real people actually live here. And not even full-time. Summer's parents split their time between this surreal apartment and their mansion in Greenwich. I'm afraid to even see pictures of the latter. I hear it has a skating rink in the backyard. It's a stroke of luck that Kamal Jane's fundraiser for leukemia is being held in one of the ballrooms downstairs. That means Summer and I didn't have to spring for a room in this insanely priced hotel. Nope, we're staying for free in the penthouse. Though that's not a detail I plan to reveal to Kamal. I feel like he wouldn't like the idea that I'm staying somewhere better than him, assuming he's at this hotel. For all I know, he's boarding his private jet after the shindig and flying to a villa in the Mediterranean.
I'm almost ready,
Summer's muffled voice replies. Define almost, I call back.
3 minutes, give or take 5 minutes.
Laughter bubbles in my throat. This girl. We got in last night and we've been having a blast so far. I ate her out on the pool table, which was hot. She blew me on her California King mattress, and then we snuggled in bed and binged a show about child killers. Summer agreed to watch it with me in exchange for... ugh, I don't even want to think about it. But I may or may not have agreed to watch the latest season of The Bachelor with her. Summer has that effect on me. My first instinct is to say yes to anything she asks, because I want to make her happy. We've spent almost every waking hour together for the past 3 weeks. She sleeps in my bedroom. Her makeup clutters my bathroom counter. Every morning she rumples her bed sheets to make it look like she's still sleeping in her own room. I think it's for Hunter's sake, but he's not an idiot. He knows. No matter how quiet we think we're being when we have sex, I have no doubt both Hunter and Hollis are well aware that we're sleeping together. But short of moving out or asking Summer to, I don't know how to make the situation with Hunter any better. And at the moment, I need to focus on impressing Kamal Jane. Summer, I grumble. Your 3 minutes are up. I know the event is right downstairs, but I think it'd make a bad impression if we were late to... My vocal cords seize, all coherent thought flying out of my brain. Summer's closet is clearly a magical portal. She entered it wearing Lululemon pants, wool socks, and one of my hockey hoodies. She exits it looking like a goddess. A slinky silver dress is plastered to her body, hugging every tantalizing curve. A slit goes up her thigh, revealing one long tanned leg, and her silver stilettos add about another 4 inches to her already tall frame. Her golden hair is up in an elegant twist held together by an ornate clip that sparkles under the light fixture overhead. It takes me a moment to realize that her hair clip is sparkling because it's encrusted with diamonds. Summer notes my expression. Her makeup is subtle except for her bright red lips, which curve into a smile. It's really fucking hot.
You like?
She spins in a circle and her shimmery dress swirls around her ankles. I like, I say gruffly.
How much?
She plants a hand on her waist, cocks her hip, and thrusts a leg out in a pose that makes me groan. My dick twitches at the sight of her bare thigh emerging from the dress's slit. I like a lot. I clear the gravel from my throat. How about me? She scrutinizes me from head to toe, completely unnecessary considering she's the one who chose every scrap of fabric on my body, from the Tom Ford shoes to the crisp black suit jacket to the navy blue dress shirt with only the top button undone. Summer said that as hot as my chest tattoo is, she doesn't want it peeking out tonight. Apparently she's been to this leukemia fundraiser before. Why am I not surprised? And she warned me that the crowd will consist of a lot of old people with very deep pockets and very closed minds.
You look sharp, babe. Super professional. Oh, and sexy.
I laugh. Perfect. Sexy is what I'm going for. I plan on sleeping with Kamal Jane to get the job.
Let me know how that works out for you.
The penthouse has an elevator requiring a key that only Summer's family has access to. As we ride it downstairs, she takes her phone out of her silver clutch and opens Instagram.
Let's take a selfie,
she announces. And the next thing I know, she's pulling me into frame and snapping a dozen photos of us. You're the worst, I tell her, because she knows I hate selfies. She beams at me.
I think what you mean is I'm the best.
I snort. My bad, that's exactly what I meant. We reach the lobby. Summer's heels click on the marble floor as she glides across it. The Hayward Plaza is hands down the fanciest hotel I've ever seen. I can't fathom that Summer might inherit it one day. She smiles and waves at the concierge.
Evening, Thomas.
The white-haired man gives her a warm smile in return. Evening, Miss Summer. Try not to cause too much trouble tonight, will you? I snicker under my breath.
Thomas has worked here for more than 20 years, she explains as we enter another hallway that holds another elevator bank.
Really? She nods.
I was a baby when he got hired, so he pretty much watched me grow up.
Ah, so he's had a front row seat to all your troublemaking.
Oh yeah, my Greenwich friends and I used to sneak into the city and come to the hotel, and I thought I was bribing him to keep quiet by slipping him hundreds.
She makes an outraged face.
And then I found out he was double-crossing me.
I snort. Ratted you out to the parents, huh?
Every single time. But they never said a word. I didn't realize they knew about it until years later, after I left for college. My parents are really cool,
she admits.
If I wanted to cut a day of school to go shopping with my friends, they didn't mind as long as I was safe and didn't make it a habit.
The elevator shows up and we walk inside. Summer presses the button for the Heather Ballroom. There are 4 other ballrooms on the list, all named after flowers. The lily, the rose, the heather, and the dahlia. Fancy. The doors ding open and we're met by a crescendo of noise, a symphony of glass clinking, high heels clacking on hardwood, the hum of conversation, laughter. Summer links her arm through mine as we approach the massive arched doorway of the ballroom. Beyond it, I see elegantly dressed people milling around in an elegantly decorated room. The stage is set up for a live band, but they're not playing at the moment. Round tables with pristine tablecloths and ornate centerpieces are scattered on either side of the shiny dance floor. I don't see anyone eating actual meals, but the waiters thread their way through the crowd carrying trays of hors d'oeuvres. This totally isn't my scene. A sea of gowns and tuxedos swells before me. Fingers and earlobes and wrists sparkling and gleaming like the front window of a lighting store. And I thought Summer's diamond hair clip was flashy. I gape as I spot a middle-aged woman wearing ruby earrings that are so enormous her earlobes are actually stretching due to their heft.
Is that him?
Summer whispers in my ear. Yep. I'm not surprised that she's picked Kamal out of the crowd. Despite his small stature, he's got a big personality. He holds court across the room near the largest of the three bars in the ballroom. Wild hand gestures and animated facial expressions accompany whatever long-winded anecdote he's regaling his audience with. We stand there watching as his half-dozen admirers all burst into laughter.
Must be a great story,
she remarks.
Or it's boring as fuck and they're just sucking up to him because he's a gazillion trillionaire.
I laugh. My girl has a way with words, especially ones she makes up. Could go either way.
Well, let's say hello. He's the reason you're here, right?
Right. Anxiety tickles my stomach as we approach the bar. The second he notices me, Kamal breaks off mid-sentence, his expression lighting up. He slaps the arm of the old dude beside him and says, "Gonna have to excuse me, brother, my guest has arrived." He disengages from the group and strides toward me. "You made it! Thanks again for inviting..." He's still talking, as he always does. "Was worried about you, man. Everyone else got here before the doors were even open, saw them lurking in the lobby like a bunch of creeps, but hey, better early than late, huh?" There's a bite to his last statement.
"You can blame me for our tardiness,"
Summer says sheepishly.
"I held us up."
Kamal does a double take, as if he suddenly realized I'm not alone. He scrutinizes Summer from head to toe, and there's nothing subtle about the way he does it. His eyes linger on her cleavage. They linger even longer on the diamonds in her hair.
"And who might you be?"
he finally asks.
"I'm Summer."
She extends one delicate hand.
"Colin's girlfriend."
Kamal's eyebrows soar. He takes her hand, but rather than shake it, he brings it to his lips and kisses her knuckles. "Pleasure to meet you." Her smile looks forced.
"Likewise."
He releases her hand and turns to address me. "You never mentioned you had a girlfriend." I shrug awkwardly. "Well, yeah, it didn't exactly come up in the interview."
"No reason why it should have,"
Summer says lightly.
"Job interviews are about the candidate's resume, not their personal life, right?"
"Right," Kamal echoes. Once again, his tone has a bite to it, and his expression is darkening by the second. I can't figure out the source of his displeasure, but the longer he looks at Summer, the more his demeanor changes. I swear I see the corner of his mouth curl in a slight sneer. I guess the source is Summer? But I couldn't tell you why.
"Is it just me, or is this really uncomfortable?"
Summer hisses in my ear an hour later. She dragged me onto the dance floor and looped her arms around my neck, leaving me no choice but to rest my hands on her hips and pretend I know how to dance. I understand her motivation, though. It was the only way to unglue ourselves from Kamal's side. He hasn't let us out of his sight since we arrived. That's not to say he hasn't been mingling. He has, only he's been dragging me and Summer along with him to every conversation. The other job hopefuls trail behind us like baby ducklings, and I feel bad for them because he isn't paying them a lick of attention. He seems utterly fascinated by Summer, yet at the same time, I sense animosity rippling beneath the surface. "It's not just you, he's acting strange."
"No, he's acting like a dick."
She bites her lip.
"I feel like he's judging us, I can't really explain it."
She trails off. I know precisely what she means. I've felt it too. The song ends before I'm ready, and panic jolts through me when the bluesy lead singer announces they're taking a 10-minute break. Summer laces her fingers through mine as we walk to the edge of the dance floor.
"Don't hate me,"
she says.
"But I really have to pee."
I grip her hand. "Nope, you can't abandon me here with these people." She giggles.
"You say the word people like it's a disease."
"People are a disease," I grumble.
"You can survive without me for 5 minutes."
She kisses my cheek and then rubs her index finger over it, I suspect to wipe off the lipstick stain she left.
"I'll be right back, promise."
I watch in defeat as she saunters off. At the bar, I order a Sam Adams, and a very efficient bartender in a white shirt and black tie hands me a bottle. "Thanks," I tell her. I've barely taken a sip before Kamal appears. I'm surprised he didn't leech onto me the moment Summer and I stepped off the dance floor. "That's some dress your girlfriend's wearing, Colin," He swishes the tumbler of bourbon he's holding. It's not the first one he's consumed tonight. I've seen him order at least 3 drinks since I got here, and who knows how many he ingested before that. I make a non-committal gesture, a cross between a shrug and a hand flutter, because accepting a compliment on Summer's behalf feels weird.
Who are you?
The question comes out of left field. I furrow my brow and search his expression, but I can't decipher it.
What do you mean?
What I mean is... He throws back the rest of his drink and then slams the glass on the bar. Another one! He barks at the bartender. She flinches at his sharp tone.
Right away, sir.
What I mean, Colin, he continues, as if the woman hadn't spoken, is that I thought you were one of us. He gestures to the other 3 job candidates, 2 males, 1 female, all college-aged like me. Neil, Ahmed, Robin, me, you. The outcasts who turned to video games because of people like the girl you showed up with tonight. My shoulders stiffen. All my life I've had to deal with those people. The pretty people. He accepts his fresh drink and takes several deep swigs. The jocks and the cheerleaders and the popular assholes who think they're entitled to do whatever the fuck they want. They bully without consequences. They get everything handed to them on a silver platter. They float through life and expect everyone to step aside for them. I set my untouched beer on the bar and speak in a measured tone. I've never floated through anything. My mom's an ESL teacher and my dad is a shift supervisor at a power plant. They work their asses off and so do I. I spent all my free time in high school drawing and painting and playing video games and playing hockey. I relent, even though I know it's a dirty word to him. I play hockey because I love it and I'm good at it. Same way I'm good at game design. I finish with a shrug. You've got some real arrogance on you, kid. A flash of steel enters his eyes. Summer chooses that unfortunate moment to return to the ballroom. She draws the attention of every person, male and female, as she struts across the shiny floor. She's stunning, and nobody can look away. Everyone wants to be a part of that beauty, even if it's simply admiring her as she sashays past them. It's her orbit. That damn orbit. Kamal slings back the rest of his drink. His disdain-heavy gaze never leaves Summer. Look at her, he mutters. You think she'd be with you if you weren't a jock? Bitches like her only want one thing, Colin. He laughs coldly. I bet if I snapped my fingers and told her I was interested, she'd be on my dick faster than you can say gold digger. Why would she waste her time on some low-rent college athlete when she can have a billionaire, right? My lips thin. You don't know her. He chuckles. Summer is halfway to us now. Her blonde hair catches the light of the huge crystal chandelier over our heads. Her diamond hair clip winks like a strobe with each step she takes. Trust me, I know her. Lordy, lordy, do I know her. All I do is date women like her. They don't give a shit about us, Colin. They're gone the moment a sweeter deal comes along. I could argue, but what's the point? He's already made his assumptions about me and Summer, about what it means to be an athlete, a nerd, a pretty girl. Summer reaches us, and she must glimpse something in my expression that worries her, because she takes my hand and gives it a comforting squeeze.
Everything okay?
Why wouldn't it be? Kamal guffaws, before tapping the bar to signal the bartender. He smacks it again and again and again, like a bratty kid trying to get his mom's attention. Bourbon! He snaps at the harried woman. He turns back to us. So what's your major? He asks Summer. She blinks at the sudden change of topic.
Fashion?
He interrupts before she's done speaking. Of course it's fashion. Scorn drips from every word.
You got a problem with fashion?
She asks lightly, but I can tell from her rigid posture that she's on guard. She manages a teasing laugh.
Because as far as I can tell, you sure do enjoy the company of models.
He doesn't laugh back. I see. Someone like me can't date beautiful women? Is that what you're insinuating?
Not at all. And clearly you can date beautiful women because you...
They're only with me for my money. Is that what you think?
Of course not. I just...
Of course you would think that, he snaps. His cheeks are slowly reddening. And guess what? You're right. That is the only thing pretty bitches like you are after. Money. You won't be signing any prenups, will you, Summer? No, no, no. Bitches like you need to be taken care of. You need to spend all my hard-earned cash. I move closer to Summer in a protective gesture. That's enough, I say in a low voice. He keeps throwing the word bitch around, and loudly, I suspect he's talking about one specific woman, the girl from college who wouldn't sign his prenuptial agreement. But I don't give a shit if he had his heart broken by the Queen of fucking England. Nobody talks to or about Summer like that. Kamal isn't intimidated by the menacing command. He laughs again, a high-pitched sound that grates on my nerves. It's enough when I say it's enough. He tosses back the last of his bourbon and then tries to place the empty tumbler on the bar, except he's about a foot away from it because he's drunk as a skunk and lacking all coordination. So he sets the glass down on nothing. It crashes to the floor and shatters. Glass shards shoot in all directions, and I quickly pull Summer away from the mess. I look at the bartender. Could you please call someone to come and...
Oh, they'll come!
Kamal hoots.
Someone always comes to clean up my messes. Wanna know why, Colin? Summer? Hazard, I guess?
He starts cackling to himself.
Because I'm a billionaire. I'm a fucking god in the tech industry, and I can buy and sell everyone in this fucking room.
You're drunk, I coldly interrupt.
Oh, shut up, you dumb jock.
He's so sloshed he's rocking on his feet, but when I reach out to try and steady him, he slaps my hand away.
Fuck off. I don't need your help, and I don't need you working for my company. You got that?
The position's been filled, Colin. He chortles again. Thank you for your interest. Summer takes a menacing step toward him.
What's the matter, Mr. Jane? You won't hire Colin because, what, he plays hockey and is better looking than you?
He takes a step back. Glass crunches beneath his expensive leather shoes. From the corner of my eye, I see several figures approaching. All around us, people are staring. Their curious gazes pierce into me. My spine won't stop prickling.
Miss Hayward, are you all right?
A tall, bulky man in a black suit and tie appears in front of us. I have no idea who he is, but Summer does. She gratefully touches his arm.
I'm fine, Diego, but there's broken glass all over the floor. Could you ask maintenance to send someone ASAP?
Right away.
He flicks a wary look at Kamal. Kamal's busy staring at Summer.
Hayward?
He echoes. He furrows and unfurrows his brow repeatedly.
Who the fuck are you?
Watch your language, Mr. Jane, barks Diego.
Who the fuck are you?
Is the retort.
I'm the head of security at this hotel,
the beefy man replies, baring his teeth in the scariest smile I've ever seen.
The hotel that Ms. Hayward's family happens to own, and I do believe it's time for you to retire for the evening, Mr. Jane. Why don't I have one of my associates escort you to your suite?
Fuck you! I'm giving a fucking speech in 10 fucking minutes.
He looks over at me and starts to laugh in loud nasally snorts.
Well, good for you, Colin. Here I thought she was the gold digger riding your big cock for your jock money, but you're the gold digger, eh? Digging for gold in her heiress pussy.
Summer flinches. Diego steps forward. Me, I sadly shake my head and meet Kamal's glazed eyes. It's a really depressing world you live in, man. This world where everybody's a gold digger, where everybody's using each other or competing against each other. This world where two people can't be together because they might love each other. I chuckled darkly.
Honestly? I'm glad you're not giving me the job. I'd rather be out on the street than work for someone like you.
I don't even want to know what kind of toxic working environment you create for your employees. I think Kamal tries to keep arguing, but I tune him out. Besides, Diego and his associates are prompt in escorting the drunk and belligerent billionaire out of the Heather Ballroom. I don't know what that means for the leukemia fundraising, but as much as I support the cause, I don't care to stay a second longer at this stuffy, shitty event. In unspoken agreement, Summer and I leave the ballroom. I can tell she's upset because her teeth are digging into her bottom lip, but she doesn't say a word. Not a single word, at least not until we're riding the private elevator up to the penthouse. The moment the doors ding open, Summer fixes me with a miserable look and says,
I'm breaking up with you.
29. Fitz. I gape at her slender back as she stalks out of the elevator and into the marble-laden foyer. Did she just say she's breaking up with me?
Like hell you are!
I roar. Her stilettos echo loudly on the marble, and she stops to kick them off. I take advantage of the brief pause in her strides by charging forward to grab her arm.
Summer, what the hell?
She doesn't answer. Shrugging my hand off, she sets her small silver clutch on the mahogany credenza. Then she removes the clip from her hair. Somehow the hairstyle stays intact, and I realize it's being held up by a dozen tiny pins. She starts taking the pins out one by one as I watch in astonishment. She won't even look at me.
What the hell is going on?
I demand. Finally, she meets my confused eyes.
I cost you that job.
I blink.
What? You didn't get the job because of me,
she mutters.
Obviously that jackass had a bad experience with a pretty girl who turned him down.
I'm sure he did, but I guarantee he also had a bad experience with some jock who beat him up. This has nothing to do with you.
It had everything to do with me. You heard the way he was talking to me. The night would have gone smoothly if I hadn't come with you. But that's what happens when I go places, Fitz. I attract drama. I don't mean to, but it just friggin' happens.
She puffs out a bleak breath.
You hate drama, and you hate attention, and you just had an entire ballroom full of people staring at you because of me. Because you were defending me. And the same thing happened at Malone's last month.
I rub the bridge of my nose. What the hell is she talking about? I defended her, and myself, because Kamal was out of line. I say as much, but she stubbornly shakes her head.
I'm not doing this anymore, okay, Fitz? You prefer to remain invisible. Well, look what happened down there. The most visible thing ever.
She's right. When Kamal had been screaming and cackling and acting like an overall jackass, I'd felt as if there were a bright spotlight shining on me. I'd sensed the nosy stares and heard the hushed whispers. But when I told him off, I didn't care that the whole room was watching and listening. I only cared that Kamal was being rude to Summer, and that was unacceptable to me. Do you really want to talk about drama? I ask her. Because you're being a drama queen right now, babe.
I am not.
Yes, you are. You're overreacting, going from zero to breakup without even talking about it.
There's nothing to talk about. You don't want to be in the spotlight. I invite it. Sometimes intentionally, but most times not.
She makes a frustrated noise.
That job was important to you.
It was, but you're more important. I don't say it out loud, not because keeping my emotions under lock and key is a habit of mine, but because Summer is marching off again, heading for the winding staircase that leads upstairs. The penthouse has three floors, don't get me started, and her bedroom is on the third. I hurry after her.
Stop!
I command.
No.
She keeps going.
You're such a brat. You're such a bully.
She retorts.
I want to be alone, we're broken up.
We're not broken up!
I yell. Jesus, I don't think I've raised my voice more than 10 times my entire life. And now a couple of months with Summer and I'm on my way to yelling myself hoarse. She brings out a growly, primal side of me I hadn't known existed until she showed up and started driving me batshit crazy. And I frickin' love it. I spent years fighting so hard to avoid conflict. I let my folks spew their poison about each other because it's easier than the arguments and guilt trips that ensue if I try to make them see the light. I avoid social situations because I don't want any attention on me. I date chicks who are as introverted as I am, because then they don't expect me to cut loose at parties or attend extravagant events like leukemia charity galas. I didn't mind that existence. It's been nice and comfortable, conflict-free. But I never felt truly alive until Summer. I don't want to be with a woman who hides in the shadows with me, because that enables me to keep hiding, and that's what I've done for years, hidden pieces of myself from my parents, my friends, chicks, the world. I want someone who encourages me to step out of my comfort zone, and Summer is that someone. She drives me nuts. She does crazy shit like pull a girl's hair at a bar for calling her a slut. She feels up half-naked football players in our living room. She does cute little ballet jumps when she's making breakfast in our kitchen. And yes, she makes me lose my temper sometimes, but I make her lose hers. It's part of the fun.
I'm going upstairs, Fitz. You can sleep on the couch or in Dean's room or any of the other rooms, but not mine because we're broken up.
Say that one more time, I fucking dare you. She stops at the foot of the staircase and turns around. Her green eyes glitter with fortitude.
We're broke.
I lunge forward. She throws up her hands.
Don't you dare!
Yeah, that's not gonna happen. I grab her by the waist and heave her wriggling body over my shoulder, clamping a hand over her ass. We're going to sit down and talk about this. I growl, spinning toward the living room.
There's nothing to talk about. Put me down.
She manages to wrench herself free, her bare feet slapping the marble floor when they make contact with it.
Would you listen to me? We're not breaking up. It's not happening, Summer. I don't give a shit about the job at Orcus Games. I give a shit about you. That bastard was rude to you. He was rude to both of us. And I refuse to work for someone who treats people with disrespect or behaves that way in public. I put him in his place. And if I had the choice, I'd do it all over again. You hear me? Because he was a jackass to you. And I love you.
Summer's breath catches.
That's...
She gulps.
That's the first time you've ever said that.
Well, it's true. I love you. You're my girlfriend.
Was your girlfriend.
Are.
Was.
I wrap my arms around her waist and tug her against me. When she gasps, I know she feels the erection pressing into her belly. You can argue till you're blue in the face, but we both know we're not breaking up. My hand slides under her dress to caress her smooth thigh, and we both know you love me too. Her eyes narrow as she studies my face.
You're different.
She's right, I am. My patience is thin, and my nerves are shot. I'm still pissed at Kamal, still pissed at Summer, yet at the same time I want to fuck her like I've never wanted to fuck her before. Groaning softly, I cup the warm heaven between her legs. When I encounter her bare pussy, I shudder with desire. You weren't wearing panties this entire time. I croak.
No, this dress can't handle panty lines. I'd never do that to Vera. Who's Vera? You know what, forget it. Fitz.
She swallows again.
I'm sorry I cost you the job.
I shake my head at her. You still don't get it, do you? You didn't cost me a job. Kamal Jane cost himself an employee. I'm a good designer. I'll find something else, I promise. But I'll never find another you. Her lips part in wonder.
That's the sweetest thing you've ever said to me.
I can be sweet when I want to. My knuckles graze her clit. But right now, I'm feeling dirty. I slip a finger inside her. Spread your legs so I can screw you against the wall. Her jaw falls open at the wicked demand.
Oh my God, you're in a mood tonight.
Yeah, I am. So for Christ's sake, stop trying to break up with me. Stop worrying about this job. Just stop and kiss me. When my mouth covers hers, she finally quits arguing and kisses me back with a level of passion that steals my breath. I grind against her, but it's not enough. My aching cock is straining behind my zipper and I'm too primed for foreplay. I just need to be inside you. I whisper in her ear. I'll make you feel good later, promise.
You make me feel good always.
She whispers back, and damned if my heart doesn't beat a little bit faster. Thanks to Summer, I always keep a condom in my pocket these days, no matter the occasion. I don't bother dropping my trousers. I unzip, pull out my cock, cover it up. Then I yank Summer's dress up, lift one of her long legs to my hip, and with one deep stroke, I bury myself inside her.
Oh my God,
she moans. The heat of her surrounds me, her inner muscles clamping around my dick as if to trap it in place. My skin is on fire. My heart beats in a sharp staccato against my rib cage. I'm hot and hard and in desperate need of release. There's nothing graceful about the pounding I give her. The wall behind her shakes and the credenza rattles as I fuck her standing up. Her legs snake around my waist and she's so wet and tight I can't think straight. I can't stop the freight train of pleasure that slams into me without warning. I bury my face in the crook of her neck and tremble against her body, coming hard enough to see stars.
Fuck yes.
I grunt against her neck. My hips keep rocking for several moments before going still. I know she didn't come, but I already promised I'd make it up to her. My knees start to wobble, but still I don't move.
You feel so good, I mumble. I never want to leave you.
Ding! We both jolt in surprise when the elevator doors slide open. The next thing I hear is,
what the fuck?
It's Dean. As in Summer's brother, Dean.
As in my good friend, Dean.
How is this happening again?
Happening again?
Summer cries in embarrassment. I honestly don't know. This is the second time someone's walked in on us while I've been lodged deep inside her, but this is a million times worse because it's her brother. I'm about to turn around when I realize that if I do, Dean will see my dick flapping in the wind and know where it was a second before.
I'm gonna kick your ass, Fitzgerald.
Dean?
Summer begs, burying her face against my chest.
Turn around, please.
Oh my fucking god, are you having sex?